Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So as we speak, Mayor de Blasio is laying out details of his affordable housing plan. This is a plan that was supposed to be rolled out last Thursday, but got delayed when the teachers' contract negotiation suddenly broke through. But believe it or not, the affordable housing crisis did not resolve itself over the weekend. So the mayor is back out behind a podium right now. We're going to give you a three-minute excerpt of what the mayor said just moments ago, telling people the approach with which he hopes to get to 200,000 more units of affordable housing in New York City. Listen.
This plan, over the next 10 years, will create opportunity for so many people who are currently being priced out of our city. It will create affordability in the midst of what has been the greatest affordability crisis the city has ever experienced. It will be a central pillar in the battle against inequality. This plan took a lot of effort, and it'll take a lot more effort to implement it. But when we do, it will change the face of this city forever and for the good of our people. Now, it's important to put this in perspective. This is literally the largest and most ambitious affordable housing program initiated by any city in this country in the history of the United States of America. It is the largest, fastest affordable housing plan ever attempted at the local level. Yes, it is ambitious. We're proud that it's ambitious. Yes, it will take everything we've got, but that's what's needed to address an affordability crisis that we've never seen the likes of before. When I talk about the size of this plan, the speed of this plan, to build and preserve 200,000 units over 10 years, that's a pace never before seen in the history of New York City. And the total impact of this plan, when you include the public financing and the private investment it will leverage, the total impact of this plan will be $41 billion. $41 billion of attack on the problem of affordable housing. We know this plan will change the lives of so many New Yorkers for the better. 200,000 units translates into housing for at least a 500,000 people. Let's put that in perspective. A 500,000 people, more than the entire population of Kansas City, Missouri, more than the entire population of Atlanta, Georgia, more than the entire population of Miami, Florida. That much housing will be created in the next 10 years through this plan for New Yorkers. And we know that we can't wait. We know it's the time to be bold, because people's lives are being affected right now by this affordability crisis. We didn't want to take the easy way out. We didn't want to take the slower path. We wanted to challenge ourselves to do something that had never been done before, because our people need it. For the 500,000 New Yorkers who benefit, they won't be paying 50% or more of their income in rent, as so many of our fellow citizens do right now. They won't be living doubled up with family or friends, as is the norm for so many New Yorkers. They won't be living in homeless shelters. And yes, this affordable housing program will be one of the tools we use to reduce the number of people in shelter. People will have homes they can actually afford.
Mayor Bill de Blasio just moments ago beginning to lay out his 200,000-unit affordable housing plan. He called it, as you heard there, the largest, fastest affordable housing plan in any city in the history of the United States. We're getting more details as the mayor is continuing to speak. We'll play you another clip in just a minute. And let's get some details and reaction from Nancy Bieberman, president and founder of the Women's Housing and Economic Development Corporation, a housing advocacy group. Nancy, welcome to WNYC on what may turn out to be a historic morning for affordable housing.
Thanks, Brian. Glad to be talking to you and to have the opportunity to hear the mayor speak so eloquently and I think with really appropriate urgency.
One stat that just came out as he has continued to speak, is that it looks like this will be weighted toward preserving affordable apartments rather than constructing new ones. Apparently, the balance is building 80,000, preserving 120,000. So is that only an 80,000 net gain in the number of affordable apartments? And if so, will that really help 500,000 New Yorkers, the number that the mayor gave in that clip?
Well, like you, I'm just hearing this and not, you know, without the opportunity of looking at the plan and seeing the details. So preservation is hugely important. I mean, it is so important that subsidized affordable housing does not, you know, sunset, in other words, expire, you know, within 30 years of its creation, as so many of the existing affordable housing programs do, so that every 10 years or so, you've got a mayor saying, we're going to build, but there's really never a net gain because we're losing as quickly as we're building. So I think that preservation and new construction have to go hand in hand. What the numbers turn out to be, it's hard to comment, you know, at this this moment without looking at it in more detail, but I think they're very important complementary strategies.
And as you indicate, it really highlights how much of a sieve for affordable housing New York has become, how much of a leaky ship taking on water. If Mitchell-Lama housing expires after a few decades as subsidized or rent-controlled, if the rent-stabilized housing stock in New York, which is still about 1 million apartments, keeps leaking stabilized apartments into market rate rents each time an apartment turns over because the current law allows landlords to do certain kinds of renovations that convert them to market rate. This is the problem as much as the lack of new ones, and I guess it's something that any administration has to address.
Yes, I really think that, you know, New York has the benefit and decades, you know, half a century or more of history of tenant protection laws, you know, really coming out of the Second World War and the housing crisis that existed then. And these tenant protection laws were always predicated on the fact that there was an extremely, really extremely low vacancy rate. So we've been in a constant state of what the law calls a housing emergency for a very, very long time. Nothing has happened to, you know, shift the emergency. It's only gotten greater as the economy has changed and it has become more difficult for moderate and middle-income families to, you know, to afford New York when there's so much pressure at the upper end.
So let's play another minute and a half clip of the mayor just from a couple of minutes ago. He was on this show on Friday, and he talked about how his approach to developers would be to ask more of them in terms of the percentage of units and new developments that are affordable, but at the same time to try to streamline the process and help developers get their plans through more quickly than in the past. So that kind of a trade-off. So let's see what he has to say about that today. Here is a minute and a half of Mayor de Blasio moments ago talking about how he's going to work with developers.
This plan is different from previous affordable housing plans, not just because it is the largest ever initiated in the history of this city, but also because we're doing things in many other ways differently. The time frame is the fastest ever. The approach we're taking to the real estate community is different. And there are a lot of members of the real estate community here, and I look forward to working closely with them, as do the members of our administration. And I think we've been straightforward in saying we're going to drive a hard bargain. We're going to get everything we can for the public. And we know that that can work for everyone in the end, because making sure there's the maximum affordable housing is in the interest of all New Yorkers. We saw this at the Domino Sugar site.
Yes.
We took a plan and made it better. More affordable housing for the people of the community. More units for people at the lower end of the income scale. And you're going to see more of that in this plan. Compared to the previous administration's approach, there will be a fourfold increase in the number of units devoted to the most low-income New Yorkers. At the same time, there'll be a heavy emphasis on creating more units for middle-income New Yorkers who are also struggling to make ends meet. And there will be a huge employment impact via this plan. Our estimate is that over the course of the 10 years, 194,000 construction jobs will be created and nearly 7,200 permanent jobs. So this plan also plays an important role in our efforts to create more jobs and better jobs for New Yorkers.
Mayor de Blasio, again from just moments ago, as he is still laying out his affordable housing plan at a news conference right now. We're getting instant reaction from Nancy Bieberman, president and founder of the Women's Housing and Economic Development Corporation, a housing advocacy group. One of the things that jumped out at me from that clip, Nancy, is what may be a tension, and I wonder if you experience it in the housing advocacy community, a tension between numbers of new affordable units created for low-income New Yorkers, I think he said the lowest-income New Yorkers in that clip, and those that are targeted more for more middle-income New Yorkers. And I think there are advocates on both sides. There are people who say, even though we have a shortage and a long waiting list for public housing, for example, in New York, which is, you know, for much more lower-income people, that the real crisis is in a lack of middle-class housing in New York. I wonder how you see this and how you heard the mayor there.
I think that there's a crisis for both very low-income families and for middle-income families, and I don't think that this is a zero-sum game. I think we need, you know, more affordability for lower-income families as well as for middle-income families.
Except it is a zero-sum game, isn't it? If the mayor is doing all that he possibly can do to create the largest, fastest affordable housing program in the history of the United States, but there's a number on what's achievable, and that's 200,000 units, then it is a zero-sum game, and you have to figure out how to allocate them, right?
We have to allocate them. And, you know, one of the things that the mayor said that, you know, I'm kind of curious to hear more about, he talked about pressure on the real estate community. WEDCO, my organization, is a developer also. We're a member of the real estate community. We're a nonprofit affordable housing developer, and from a mission perspective, we have no problem with permanent affordability, with creating housing for, you know, very low-income families, moderate, middle-income families. You know, this is where, you know, from a mission perspective, this is what we are set up to do. And there are many of us in the New York community who are not simply housing advocates, but are housing developers who, you know, who know how to do these projects, who know how to finance them, and who have brought, you know, hundreds and hundreds of apartments online now. You know, we have two fabulous green buildings that are not only housing, you know, hundreds of people, but are also bringing down the costs of housing, so that that is yet another factor through, you know, sustainable, energy-efficient buildings. You can bring down the operating costs, making them affordable for everybody who lives there. So I think that there are, you know, other, you know, issues that are, may not, you know, kind of come out in the main talking points of today's speech that'll actually get to, you know, what you're, what we're talking about here. You know, what's the allocation going to be in the 200,000 between, you know, formerly homeless, very low income, moderate income, middle income. Everybody needs a place at that table. And, you know, there are different sectors of the affordable and middle income housing development community that are prepared to step up and do this work.
Right. Now, the mayor keeps emphasizing how fast this is going to be, how quickly this is going to happen compared to any such plan in the past. Also at the news conference a moment ago, Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams joked that there should be so much construction in New York City that no one will be able to sleep. And that's a joke, of course. But really, are we going to see a real ramp up in the speed with which much of this construction takes place compared to even the Bloomberg years, which was so construction obsessed? And what could make it faster? Do you have any idea?
Well, I think that, you know, there would probably be a line out your door of people who could suggest ways of expediting the permitting and building process in New York City. So I think that the assertion that this can be done in a more streamlined way is true. There really are a lot of things that can be done to make this a more efficient process. And I think you only have to look at the speed with which the communities, the areas that have been upzoned in Manhattan, the speed with which these buildings are, you know, getting built should let everybody know that it's possible. You know, it's not possible. It has not been possible across the board for developments that are mixed income, you know, affordable to the lowest income people, mixed use, perhaps in the outer boroughs, but there's definitely been lightning speed in Manhattan.
Tomorrow, by the way, we're going to do a whole show special, a family meeting on the Brian Lehrer Show on rent. And some of that will be more breakdown of the affordable housing policy being announced by the mayor today. But a lot of it will be much more personal. A lot of your stories on your relationship with your rental unit, we'll just take it from there. That's enough of a tease. Tomorrow, a family meeting on rent for the entirety of the Brian Lehrer Show here on WNYC. Nancy, there is a tension, I think, between a couple of progressive values here when it comes to housing and quality of life and what makes a neighborhood and a good urban neighborhood. The mayor is very focused on density. He's going to give developers a break to build higher in areas where they couldn't build as high before if they include more affordable units. I think there's an environmental edge to that, too, because if there's more density around transit stations, then fewer people drive, more people take mass transit. But density, 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 that is at odds with another notion of quality of life in the city, and that is that we want livable neighborhoods and that neighborhoods can only sustain so many people before you overwhelm the parks, before you overwhelm the trains, before you overwhelm the street life. Do you see those two things as at odds with each other, a kind of, I don't know, Jane Jacobs livability, brownstone Brooklyn, where the mayor himself has chosen to live, and this notion as density as the new progressive thing?
Well, I have to say, as I was listening to you speak, I was thinking Jane Jacobs. And yes, I do think that there can be a tension and that this has to be very carefully done. There are some neighborhoods where, you know, where that lend themselves better to higher density, let's put it that way. I think transit-oriented development is really always a good thing. You know, the more we can cluster, new housing around rapid transit, the better it will be for everybody. But I do think that the quality of life on the streets and what has historically made New York the place that everybody's wanted to come to is the sort of unique street-level, multi-ethnic, you know, varied retail, you know, just sort of the fun of street life when development is done right.
There's also a question, though, I think, about the affordability of a neighborhood when density increases. Even if the ratio is, say, 30% of the new units going in being affordable, which would be high by historical standards, don't we see in neighborhood after neighborhood in New York that when these dense high-rise buildings come in, that everything around them tends to get more expensive? The little neighborhood shops give way to the big box stores and the chains with more market rate apartments, even if they're affordable units contained in the buildings. The higher end stores come and replace the little neighborhood stores. The rates for rent in the lower rise buildings around, you know, the new high rise tend to go up because the neighborhood becomes generally more desirable. Isn't that happening all over town? And so does density really lower costs?
I think that density can lower costs. I think that developments that are mixed use, meaning it's more than just apartments within these buildings, and where the uses of the non-residential uses can be part of a community conversation. You know, what does this neighborhood need at the time that we are, you know, that this development is going through its various approvals? You know, if the neighborhood needs a greengrocer, you know, what kind of a greengrocer? I mean, you know, if communities can be involved in these conversations in the way that community planning boards typically are, you know, it would not be anything new. This is part of the land use review procedure already, that any development that's seeking some sort of variance, and whether the variance is to build higher or whatever it is, that these are legitimate questions for communities to raise, to talk about who lives in the neighborhoods and who's expected to live. And, you know, if people are, you know, we don't want people spending 75% of their income on food, you know, because they only have to spend 25% on rent. I mean, that will be worse than a zero-sum game. You know, it could, you know, the balance could tip, as you say, still not a good place if everything around an affordable housing development is unaffordable. So I think that the plan's aspirations are terrific, and I think that how it gets operationalized and the considerations that go into, all right, how big, mm-hmm. and what else are we going to do to make sure that the neighborhoods support the affordable units that are being built for families. If neighborhoods can't support these in any way, if the schools, you know, are not sufficient to accommodate children, if there are not enough parks, these will cease to be desirable neighborhoods.
Indeed. So as we conclude our coverage of the mayor's affordable housing plan announcement, he just said in response to a reporter's question about the ratio between market rate and affordable housing units, the mayor said, quote, the 80-20 model is the model of the past. So we'll see how much beyond 20% he can make a new standard for developers to include in their otherwise market rate buildings. And our development reporter, Janet Babin, just tweeted that the plan is 115 pages long. So Nancy Bieberman, president and founder of the Women's Housing and Economic Development Corporation, time to start reading.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for coming on with us.